Welcome to the Money Miss podcast. I'm Simon Brewer, and along with my co-founder, Will Campion, we created this show in 2020 to explore and unravel some of the mysteries surrounding the investment and business worlds. Episodes are available on audio via most podcast platforms and on video via our YouTube channel. And we're active on all major social media platforms. To stay up to date with every episode, please do sign up to our newsletter at moneymazepodcast.com. And we'd like to thank you for listening. If we could ask one favour, we'd love you to tell a friend or colleague about us. Thank you. After hearing of the discovery of insulin in 1921, Danish Nobel laureate August Krogh and his wife Maria, doctor suffering from diabetes, travel to Canada to seek permission from the researchers to produce the life-saving medicine in Denmark. 2 years later, in 1923, the first patients were treated with their insulin, ushering the next 100 years of innovation and treatments for people living with serious chronic diseases. But the permission to develop the insulin technology also required revenues generated to help wider society, setting in motion what today is known as the Novo Nordisk Foundation. Today, Copenhagen has come to London, and we're delighted to welcome the CEO of Novo Holdings, the controlling shareholder of Novo Nordisk. Kasim Kutay, welcome to the Money Maze podcast. So, Kasim, let's get to know you a little better. What kind of child were you?
Well, first of all, you know, a child with quite a mixed background, albeit from the Middle East, but Turkish father, Syrian mother, born in Egypt, grew up in Lebanon. A happy childhood. Obviously, we had to leave Lebanon in 1975 when the war started. And a childhood that exposed me to certain, if you like, hobbies or activities that I still carry through to my life today. And cooking, inspired very much by my grandmother, and Syrian cooking, particularly from Aleppo, where she is, particularly interesting genre, very spicy food, and fishing, which I learned from my father. And I'm a very keen angler and fly fisherman today. It's one of my hobbies.
Right. Well, one of our members of our team, Celine, who is from Lebanon and is also a fantastic cook, will be particularly happy with this episode. Now, you do an undergrad and a postgrad at the London School of Economics. And was it clear to you that you were going to move into the world of finance?
No, not at all, Simon. In fact, it was quite an agonizing choice and decision because I was very much enjoying my time at the LSE. I was enjoying what I was studying and I was very inspired by my professors. So I, as you rightly said, did my bachelor's, did my master's, and was about to stay on and do my PhD. And if I had done that, I would have probably become an academic. But after a fair amount of soul searching, I decided that maybe it's time to make some money and become somewhat independent from the support of my parents. And the city was sort of very much de rigueur at the time. It was post-Big Bang and a lot of activity in the city. The city was luring a lot of the brightest minds from universities. And when I looked around me, a lot of my friends and peers were going into investment banking. So frankly, I followed the crowd and started as an analyst at Morgan Stanley in the investment banking division in 1989.
So you stayed up to 07, you end up as chair of the European Healthcare Group, you're an investment banker specializing in, you know, in the healthcare world, and then you move to Merlis & Co., a well-known investment banking boutique as a partner, and you're there from 2009 to 2016. And then in September 2016, you become the CEO of Novo Holdings, which some would argue is sort of, you know, the prime job that intersects finance and healthcare. Was it good fortune or was it part of the master plan?
Both. It was good fortune, of course. As you know, these positions, you know, very often it's unpredictable when they come about, and it's very much about a lucky break. So, but there was also, I'd say, in the background, a grand plan, in the sense that I was always intrigued about assuming a leadership position in healthcare in an organization that really had a strong impact in some shape or form and a very strong purpose, both of which Novo Holdings has. So when the opportunity did arise, given that sort of ambition that I had harbored, it was a very easy decision for me to really grab the opportunity and accept the role and the position, which I did very quickly.
So I want to come back to a question or an item that was raised two nights ago where we had a dinner with Nicolai Tangen of the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund, a number of previous guests, or guests in your case, to be around the table. And you made the point that the impact of technology today in, and I'm going to say life sciences, medical discovery, has never been more important. And maybe because everybody's getting, you know, a little runaway with AI, I think, and, you know, and its implications. Can you just say how you see it on the ground actually being a meaningful force for good?
Absolutely. No, I think, look, I mean, digital health, AI in healthcare, you know, just the fusion of technology and biopharma is having a profound impact. And it's having it at many levels. It's having it at a diagnostic level. So if you think about diagnostics, you know, using AI to help diagnose disease is a reality. There are companies today, for example, that use the power of AI to best diagnose and indeed to offer a prognosis and a treatment path for very complicated disease types, like cancer, for example. So, you know, in order to treat cancer very effectively, you need to understand a lot of things. You need to understand not just the profile of your patient and the stage of the tumor, but also the genetic profile of that particular tumor. You need to understand the multitude of therapies that exist today that didn't exist 10, 15 years ago, notably immunotherapeutics, for example. And to be able to process all that data for a human mind and come up with the right treatment pathway is quite a task. And therefore, to have AI to be able to provide a second opinion or a primary opinion on diagnostics of that sort is critical. We're also seeing AI, for example, play a role in imaging. So X-ray diagnostics, for example, where being able to triage what a radiologist looks at, not based on order of when an X-ray was taken, but based on urgency because an AI machine has screened it first, is a reality. And I can give numerous more examples, but that's one example. Another example, of course, is the use of AI in drug discovery. So if you think about what drug discovery is, a key part of it is really just sequencing a host of molecules against a particular target to see what binds best and what has the most efficacious and safest outcome for a patient. And a lot of that is computation. And this is where, again, you know, computing capability, whether it be quantum, whether it be AI, comes in. And on, I can give numerous more examples. A very, very exciting area and an area that Novo Holdings is very much invested in. So we are invested very much in that sort of, if you like, the interface or companies that are working at the interface of technology and biopharma.
Well, I hope you're enjoying the show so far. We'll be back shortly after a few quick words from our sponsors. The Money Maze podcast is sponsored by IFM Investors, a global institutional asset manager whose purpose is to invest, protect, and grow the long-term retirement savings of working people. Owned by pension funds and inspired by their members, they invest in what matters. As a responsible investor, IFM actively engages with their portfolio companies on issues they care about, with the aim of improving net performance whilst minimizing risk. They manage investments across infrastructure, debt, listed equities, and private equity assets. To learn more, tap the link in the episode description. I'm thrilled to share that the Money Maze podcast is now sponsored by the World Gold Council. Gold has been at the foundation of human civilizations and economic history, from the pharaohs of ancient Egypt to James Bond, through to its vital role in central bank reserves. Gold has come to symbolize trade, culture, and currency. Discover the transformational powers of gold by watching Idris Elba's film on an adventure that explores gold's meaning and contribution to societies and economies the world over. Visit journey.gold on your browser to learn more. My question is, just describe, you are CEO of Novo Holdings, so just help us understand mission and priorities.
So the mission and the purpose of Nova Holdings is to generate attractive long-term returns on the assets of the Novo Nordisk Foundation and therefore improve people's health and to improve the sustainability of society and the planet. So it's very clear. We're here to improve health at a human level, and we're here to improve planetary health by generating attractive long-term returns on the assets of the foundation. So we generate these returns, we give dividends to the foundation every year, and the foundation then does its great philanthropic work and grant-giving activities, which are primarily focused on medical health and on planetary health. And in the last couple of years, we have sent about €1 billion to the foundation. They've given out about €1 billion. So that's the mission. And that mission started in 1999. So in 1999, there was no Novo Holdings. There was just the Novo Nordisk Foundation. And the Novo Nordisk Foundation owned the company Novo Nordisk, which was publicly traded, as it still is today, but majority controlled by the Novo Nordisk Foundation. In 1999, Novo Nordisk decided to spin off one of its divisions called Novozymes, which is a company, it's been renamed today Novonesis. It's a world leader in bioindustrials, biosolutions, which play an important role in planetary health and the green transition. With that separation and with the increasing dividend flows that the foundation saw coming its way, it actually decided that rather than house the philanthropy, grant giving, and investment activities under one roof, let's create a specialized investment arm. And thus, Novo Holdings was born as a 100% owned entity by the Novo Nordisk Foundation, but a separate entity nevertheless, a subsidiary on its own that has its own management team, has its own board of directors, and where the management team, the CEO and the rest of the team, so myself and the rest of my team, report into my board, the Novo Holdings board, which in turn then reports to the foundation board. And the mission of Novo Holdings was exactly what you said earlier, which is to manage the wealth and the assets of the foundation. The assets, when we say assets, we refer to the controlling shareholding in Novo Nordisk and Novonesis. And I sit on the board of both of those two companies on behalf of the foundation. And then the wealth, of course, is our $30 billion investment portfolio that we actively manage.
And so we can put numbers around your organization, but also the cash flows. And correct me, I might well be wrong, but did I understand that your inflows are circa $3 billion a year and your donations are half of that, $1.5 billion every year going out?
Yeah, so I think if you look at 23, we did a little bit more than that, if I'm not mistaken. But yes, essentially, you know, you are looking at what we would call total income and returns. So income is the dividends that we get from the operating companies, the returns is what we generate on the investment portfolio. But if you look at the total income and returns, say 3.5 to 4 billion euros is sort of the right number. And we send up part of that, not all of it, part of that goes to the foundation for them to do the great work that they do. And one of the reasons why the investment portfolio has grown as much as it has is, number one, we have generated attractive long-term returns, but the foundation, as I said, does not take everything that we generate. And then on top of that, you get the dividends as well from the operating companies. So we've had a very nice growth in the portfolio.
And I'm right in saying it's almost a super compounder because foundations don't pay tax. So, you know, your assets can grow at an even more attractive rate. Just give us the numbers of how many people are sitting in your company and where they're sitting.
Yeah, so we're about 200 people today. Yep. And it's quite a global business. So obviously HQ and the majority of people sit in Copenhagen, but we have an office in London as well. And then in the US, we're in Boston and San Francisco, not surprisingly, two very important biopharma hubs. Then we have a very active and vibrant office in Singapore that we opened 3.5-4 years ago, an office in Shanghai. We're looking forward to opening India, Mumbai, in the next 12 months. That's it. So 200 people, and then divided into two investment teams. So of the $30 billion, circa $30 billion that we have in the investment portfolio, $15 billion is allocated to life sciences. So very unusual that we foundation money is really dedicated in such a big way to one sector. But that's how we feel we can best generate long-term returns. And also unusual, that life science effort is a direct effort. So there's not a lot of investing through portfolio managers. We have a fully fledged venture team, a fully fledged growth equity team, and a fully fledged principal investments team that does the large equity tickets, including very substantial buyouts like the Catalent acquisition that we announced a few weeks ago. So that's a direct effort and explains why we're 200 people. The other 15 billion is what we call capital investments, and that's the typical portfolio you'd find normally in a foundation or an endowment. So a diversified portfolio of equities, fixed income, alternatives, including real estate, infrastructure, et cetera.
So I want to put both of those pieces under the microscope. And when I looked at your asset allocation, it's like, wow, essentially 50-50, I think, between private and public. Yeah. So big private allocation, which is fascinating. You are obviously believing you have this, you know, a particular insight which allows you to make these very large investments in the life sciences business. And I would say that I think from my understanding, this is one of the largest foundations in Europe.
Yeah.
So enormously important pool of capital. Isn't everybody trying to knock on your door with with new ideas?
Sure.
And how do you manage that process? Because it must be hard.
Yeah, but you know, we've been at it for a while, so we're a reasonably well-oiled machine. We have a very clear mission. We have a very clear strategy. We have very clear guiding principles with full transparency. And I think, I mean, you will have seen and looked at our documentation, but if you go into our website, I mean, I think we're as transparent as a public company, right? I mean, the annual report is very detailed. Our numbers are very detailed. So I think we're very clear in terms of what we want. And, you know, we have teams that have a very clear strategy. So, yes, I mean, and we welcome people knocking on our doors. And I think we're very, very quick because of the clarity of our strategy. We're very clear on what we turn down and what we want to pursue.
One of the things that struck me, and I went through your website, and it's very clear, it's very well laid out. You can get into the portfolio sort of, you know, immediately,
yes.
Is that you had this expression that investing in private companies, you are in the business of engaged ownership.
Absolutely.
I wonder if you could explain what that means practically.
Yeah, engaged ownership for us, and it's not just private, it's private and where we have public shareholdings as well. So in healthcare, in particular on the life science side, we feel that we bring more than just capital, that this is an area that we've invested in for a very long time. It's an area where we have very strong insights and a very strong network. And we really feel we have a lot to add by, you know, sitting around the board table and helping guide a management team with our insights and with our capabilities. So, you know, we're very focused on the corporate governance rights we have when we make our investments, and we want to make sure that we can have our voice heard and that we have a way of really adding value, as I said, with strategic insight and financial insight beyond just the handing over of cash or the investing, so to speak. So that's what we call engaged ownership. When I first joined Nova Holdings, it was referred to as active ownership. And I didn't quite like that because it got confused with ownership or activist behavior, and not judging that at all. It has its role to play in the market. But ours was about engaged ownership.
Right. Now, again, I don't want to get over my skis in matters of biology, but we do read in the West about resistance to antibiotics. And as I went through your work, there seems to be quite a lot about antimicrobial resistance.
Absolutely.
I'll stop. You can answer what's going on.
Yeah. So, you know, I said earlier that our mission is to improve people's health and the sustainability of society and the planet by generating attractive long-term returns on the assets of the foundation. And that means that a lot of the great work for human health gets done by the foundation. But every once in a while, we feel that we can have a very direct impact ourselves for a host of reasons. And in the case of AMR, we have developed a certain level of expertise in investing for the next generation of antibiotics. And so in 2018, we set up our second impact fund, where the team can make investments at below market returns in order to have a meaningful impact on a particular disease condition or a healthcare condition. And antimicrobial resistance is a huge issue. It's a silent killer. So our antibiotics are running out. You know, companies have underinvested antibiotics for a long time, and bacteria bacteria have become resistant to many antibiotics, and people are going into hospital to be treated for a particular trauma or a particular disease state. And, you know, very often they will end up being in hospital for longer and indeed even dying because they've been infected with AMR. And we felt a need to make a difference and an impact. So we set up Repair, which, as I said, is an impact fund wholly dedicated and focused to investing in novel antibiotic therapies. And I think we've had a meaningful impact in many ways, including, you know, Repair can be seen, you know, some will say it was really a precursor to something called the Action Fund, which is a substantially larger AMR fund, about $1 billion, where the investors are primarily pharma companies on a global basis, but where we played a very important role in the vision and indeed in the details of setting up that fund.
Well, I hope you're enjoying the show so far. We'll be back shortly after a few quick words from our sponsor. We're delighted to have Schroders as a sponsor and corporate partner. Schroders is a global investment manager whose purpose is to provide excellent investment performance through active decision making. For more than two centuries, Schroders has evolved their understanding of markets, offering investment solutions across fixed income, equities, multi-asset, as well as private markets through Schroders Capital. Schroders actively invests in companies with responsible and durable business models. They're also a leading specialist in impact investing for clients who want to maximize positive change. Capital is at risk with investing. So the other aspect of your thinking investing is around human and planet capital. And I'd like to understand planet capital, because I read a little bit about how you think biology may play a role in the green transition.
Yes.
And I was lost.
Yes. No, I don't blame you. A lot of people are. And we're really gearing up what we call our planetary health activities. They're about 2% of our portfolio today. It's going to go up to about 10% by 2030 as an allocation. Today, it is by and large a bioindustrials or biosolutions activity. And I'll explain, I will answer your question. But we are doing a fair amount in infrastructure, so renewables infrastructure. And then we took a decision very recently that we want to start investing in green tech and decarbonization technologies more broadly. We're doing it slowly because it's not an area that we know much about yet, but we are ramping up and gearing up. Biosolutions, we know a lot about. We're arguably the world's largest and most active investor in biosolutions, if you particularly include Novonesis, which, as I said earlier, used to be called Novozymes, which today is one of, if not the world's leading biosolutions company. What are biosolutions? Biosolutions are biotech. So it's using microbes, whether they be enzymes, bacteria, peptides, for industry. And so they take the place of fossil fuel-based and synthetic solutions. They are the enzymes that are found in bread to increase its shelf life. They are the enzymes that go into animal feed that allow them to absorb more nutrition and therefore potentially reduce the use of antibiotics in animals. They are, believe it or not, bacteria that are used to convert industrial offtake gas for uses such as biofuel. It is bacteria that are used recombinantly to produce silk, which is one of nature's strongest and most durable materials. We have a company in our portfolio that uses a bacterial technology, believe it or not, to produce biobricks and biocement. We have a company in our portfolio that produces bioleather through the use of fungus. So it's a fungal-based application and technology. So a fascinating area, and one that has a very important role to play in the green transition, and one where an area that's benefiting from a lot of the same advancements on the human health side. So a lot of this is all about CRISPR and genetic editing, et cetera. And that clearly has a role to play in biosolutions as well. It's an area where a lot of the innovation happens in Europe, but where Europe really needs to get its act together in order to remain competitive. We are really starting to fall behind the US and other jurisdictions because of the approval processes involved in biosolutions in Europe. So it takes 2 to 3 years to have a bioindustrials product approved in the US. It takes 7 to 8 in Europe because of legacy anti-GMO sentiment. And that is something that European policymakers really need to focus on. Otherwise, it's just going to be another area where Europe, from an innovation perspective, falls behind other jurisdictions.
I mean, we hear this so often in talking to leaders on the Money Mates podcast that the European regulatory environment, which has bedeviled it, and, and let's face it, that's one of the reasons that lots of people have got fed up with, you know, you know, the European. But is there any signs that there's a recognition leading to change?
I think so. I mean, certainly there's been, the UK has made some steps towards change post-Brexit. And then I would certainly say, you know, policymakers in Europe are beginning, given the overwhelming need to green transition, you know, are increasingly aware of the need to act and do something and to improve the regulatory process. In terms of concrete action, we've yet to see anything meaningful. But I sincerely hope that something does happen sooner rather than later, because we will look back and it's just yet going to be another example where, you know, well-meaning regulatory hurdles and processes have in fact held back innovation and much needed innovation.
Yep. Somebody quipped the other day to me, you know, increasingly the US is a great place to earn money and Europe is a great place to spend it, but that's not how we need it to be. So, Kasim, one question just coming back to the public assets in your portfolio, the other half. I've seen it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a combination of direct and passive. And where you go to find external managers, typically what are those circumstances?
Yeah. Well, the capital investments portfolio is very different from our life science investment portfolio in that capital investments is obviously broad and diversified. And as I said, a classic portfolio you'd find in any foundation or endowment, diversified portfolio of equities, fixed income, and alternatives. But also it's primarily a portfolio manager-led effort rather than a direct effort as life sciences. Now, having said that, we do a reasonable-sized chunk of direct investing out of capital investments, and that direct effort will continue to grow. But it is primarily a portfolio manager-led effort. But it's a very special approach. So you'll be hard-pressed to find any household names or well-recognized names as managers in our portfolio. We generally shun the very big houses and the big names. Sort of the secret sauce of our approach is really what I would call specialist niche portfolio managers, where the individuals have the majority of their wealth tied in the business themselves, where they take a long-term fundamental approach to valuation that we like, and it's what we adopt and look at. We also really take our time in following managers for quite a prolonged period, sometimes many years before we eventually commit to them. So it's a portfolio manager-led strategy, but it's also one that has a sort of a specialist edge to it, if you like.
Now, we had a question from somebody who's a friend of the show, James Brooke Turner, who's an investment director at the Nuffield Foundation, author of a new book, Investing for Charities, which, you know, for any of our listeners who are in the charity space is going to be really interesting. And he said, how does the board decide on the division between giving away money and reinvesting it?
Well, I mean, for us, it's very clear. I mean, for us, we invest our money in accordance with the wishes of our one investor, which is the Novo Nordisk Foundation. And they give us a return target, which is 8%. They give us certain risk metrics. And they tell us, you know, off you go and please deliver. But they're also very clear that this is a foundation in perpetuity. They want to have a greater impact in terms of improving human health and planetary health. And they want to see that investment portfolio grow. And therefore, they take, say, 3 or 4% of the 8% we generate per annum. We say 3 or 4% of accessible capital. And so if we do 8% or more, you know, that stays in the investment portfolio and continues to compound and grow the investment portfolio. And as I said, that we also get the dividends from the operating companies on top of that. But all of that is very clear and set in stone, and it's done in sort of five-year cycles. So we're not sitting there making these decisions on an annual basis.
And when one thinks about Denmark, you know, a wealthy, small country with this extraordinary sort of, you know, ecosystem, and then global needs. I know you're not involved in specifically in the donation process, but broadly, when people are thinking about all these worthy causes and, you know, a big place, what are sort of the guiding principles?
Well, I mean, again, the foundation is incredibly transparent about what it's focused on, and its website and publications are very clear about what they're trying to do and achieve. It is very much of a medical and planetary health focused effort. There is a social and humanitarian leg to what the foundation does. It does a lot of very important work in places such as the Middle East and the refugee camps there, in Africa and other jurisdictions. But the primary focus is, as I said, on science and its application for human health and planetary health. And that is then subdivided into various divisions and the various groups within the foundation. The center of gravity is Denmark. The foundation is becoming more and more international as we speak, beginning to open overseas offices. And of course, if we continue to grow the investment portfolio successfully, if the operating companies continue to grow successfully, I think over time, that'll enable the foundation to become even more international in its focus and efforts.
Thank you. So I'm going to move to ask you 8 rapid-fire questions, which require short answers. And so you don't have time to think about them. I just, you know, we've got all sorts of constituents in the various parts of the world, young to old, business to, you know, investment. Your most important mentor and why?
My most important mentor is somebody you know well, Bob Bradway. So Bob has had an impact on my life in many ways, but probably the most important one was getting me to join his healthcare team in late 94, early 95 at Morgan Stanley. So up until then, I was a generalist in corporate finance. And then Bob convinced me to join the healthcare group. And I haven't looked back. As you said at the outset, the intersection of finance and healthcare is my passion. It's where I've spent most of my career. And I just love, you know, very passionate about this industry and its impact, and hence why when the role came up at Nova Holdings, given that platform and its impact, it was a very easy decision for me to make to move on.
And if listeners didn't, Bob Bradway, CEO of Amgen, was on last year. Really, really interesting interview that is as relevant today as it was. Second question, how do you deal with stress?
It's a very good question. I deal with stress. Look, I am passionate about my hobbies and I do get out and, you know, and de-stress. Fishing, fly fishing is one. I was actually just saltwater fly fishing in Belize 3 weeks ago, just got back. I'll be going to Iceland this summer a couple of times, which I've done without fail for 23 years. And then, like you, I'm quite a keen golfer. So I don't do either one as much as I'd like, given obviously work commitments, but those are very important elements for de-stressing for me. And then obviously having fun with family. We're a very tight-knit family and one that has that increasingly prevalent syndrome of boomerang kids. So,
I know.
They're in their 20s, but living at home. So, we have a lot of fun together.
Exactly what I'm experiencing now. You must have known I was going to ask this question when we talked about golf. Is that who would you most like to play with and which course?
Ooh, good question. Very good question. Who would I most like to play with? It's got to be Augusta. It has to be Augusta. And who would I like to play Augusta with? Either a pro, you know, one of those pros with those sublime, classic, easy-flowing swings, somebody like a Luke Donald, or with a dear friend who I've played a lot of golf with over the years, like Bob Bradway.
This industry, you get information overload. How do you deal with just the volume of stuff you need to get through?
Very good question. And I mean, just information overload. What's really intriguing is the contradictions in the information that come from the same sources and how quickly minds shift, right? So you get something from one particular house 1 week with a very strong view about where rates or something else is headed, and then another week it's a different story. I tell you, we're blessed in one way, Simon. We are a long-term investor with a long-term focus, and we value all our assets on the long-term fundamental cash flow profile of those assets and really judging those assets on the sustainability of that cash flow as well by, you know, just that classic analysis of the barriers to entry and moats and competitive profile, et cetera, et cetera. And when you have the luxury of being able to focus beyond just the quarterly or the annual cycles and take a long-term view and focus on fundamentals, you can actually rise up above a lot of the noise. which we do.
A lot of students listening to this show, what advice would you give if they're thinking about finance or the world of healthcare?
Look, both amazing, right? Both wonderful healthcare, I would say intellectually incredibly rewarding, something that I think what's really interesting about healthcare is the way you relate to it personally, right? I mean, we, you know, it's something that touches all of us and touches all of our families. So I think there's that kind of sort of personal component to it. And then just the impact. And I would say the other thing about healthcare right now is we are truly in an era of golden innovation. It started about 8-9 years ago. We're seeing record FDA approvals. We're seeing treatments and cures for disease states that were not available a decade ago. So an amazing time to be working in the world of healthcare. Look, finance is finance. It has its benefits as well. I'd say for me, the most rewarding thing about having started a career in finance is it's a terrific place to learn about business, broadly speaking. It's a wonderful business foundation. And then you see so much of the world very early on and meet a lot of decision makers very early on in your career. So two very compelling career paths.
What advice would you give to a 20-year-old Kasim Kutay?
I would say it's interesting. I'm going to go back to my mentor, Bob Radway. He used to have a saying, he'd say, don't sweat the little things. And it's amazing how with hindsight, we stress about certain things. But when we look back on them, just say, God, you wasted so much emotional energy where in the grand scheme of things, when you're in sort of the eye of the storm, if you like, you get worked up about it. But if you really are able to step back, you realize that in the grand scheme of things, it's little things. But we all get so caught up in sweating the little things. So don't sweat the little things.
Final, perhaps the most important question, Kasim, which is, how good is your Danish?
Not very good, but getting better. So as I always tell people in life, very often it's the direction of travel that counts.
Right.
So that's what I tell people about rates today. There's a lot of anxiety, you know, is the next move up? Is it? I just say, well, look, ultimately the direction of travel, though, is going to be down, I hope, I think. with my Danish, not very good, but the direction of travel is all right.
Okay, great place to stop, Kasim. This has been a really, really interesting conversation. I've been looking forward to, particularly given all the lack of understanding I have in this space, although lots of information, as I said, particularly on our website, was very unusually helpful. I think it was the late, great Steve Jobs who'd said that we were entering into an era where the intersection of biology and technology was going to be profound and a step change. And I think you've absolutely talked to that. I know that Dame Kate Bingham had also been on the show and had spoken about that. So I think that, you know, we probably just need to understand the enormity of what's going on. I think your second point, we'll make sure that it gets in front of some political body in the Eurozone, is the Euro regulatory framework is not helpful for stimulating all the good stuff that has to happen. And, you know, this is an extraordinary story that you're part of and success. And with the flywheel of what happens when you are creating wealth, encouraging investment, you know, encouraging entrepreneurialism. And, you know, people, we've had David Schwimmer from the London Stock Exchange Group again talk about, you know, the need for this growth capital. And there are some blocks. Some of them are regulatory. Some of them, you know, in some countries are also just not embracing the imperative of capitalism and helping us, you know, figure ways out of a lot of this, you know, stuff that we have. And finally, that, you know, Nova Holdings, of which you are the CEO, and the whole ecosystem around it is doing some extraordinary work. And, you know, well done. You know, keep at it.
Thank you. And thank you very much for having me, Simon. Very much enjoyed it.
Pleasure. Okay. All content on the Money Maze podcast is for your general information and use only, and is not intended to address your particular requirements. In particular, the content does not constitute any form of advice, recommendation, representation, endorsement, or arrangement, and is not intended to be relied upon by users in making any specific investment or other decisions. Guests and presenters may have positions in any of the investments discussed.